Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is Chet, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chet.
Welcome to Wacky Paw 15 in Las Vegas. Wacky Paw is the Western Area Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me open this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The topic of this panel meeting is controversial issues in AA. And I have now asked Robbie to read a passage from AA literature related to the topic.
There it is. Rob, alcoholic. Reading for controversial issues in AA panel. This reading is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, chapter 5, page 69. Then we have the voices that who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We're not the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? That's it.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you, Robbie. All right. Now I would like to welcome our first speaker, Taylor E. from Portland, Oregon.
My name's Taylor. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Taylor.
And I'm really excited to be here. I've never done a panel meeting before, so this is pretty cool. So just to identify myself as an alcoholic a little bit, I came to AA because I, when I drank, I didn't know what was going to happen. When I wanted to stop, I couldn't stop. And I always knew that there was something wrong with my drinking, like from the very first time I drank, because I blacked out the first time I ever drank. And that was just kind of how it was for me, was I blacked out almost every time. And I got to a point when I was 18 where I just, like, wasn't okay with it anymore. And I had a really, like, this moment where I knew that I needed to do something differently. And I called someone who's in my family that's in the program and went to a meeting. And I've been sober ever since I started working the steps. So that's just, like, really quick rundown of how I got sober. I never went to treatment, so I was never told not to date in my first year in AA. And I think that that's something that people that go to treatment hear a lot. And it's been passed around, like people that have gone to treatment tell that to other people who haven't gone to treatment. And it's kind of like an unspoken rule in AA. Or an unofficial rule, I guess. But I definitely didn't go by that rule. When I got 30 days, this guy with 2 years took me on a date to celebrate my 30 days. And I just didn't know any better. The thing is, there are no rules. The book, I mean, the book says that the people who wrote the Big Book didn't want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. That's for us to decide based on our own ideals. And that's why we make an ideals list when we do a fourth step. That rule about 1 year, that's something that probably through experience, treatment centers have decided is like a good thing to tell people to do. But it's really, I think it's really just like a case-by-case thing, and all I can tell you is my experience, because there are no rules, and I'm not an authority on this at all. I just know like what it was like for me. And what I can tell you is that I dated a lot in my first year, and I would go to meetings like and sit in the back and text and like wait for the cute guys to come talk to me afterwards. And like that was like AA was like my social playground for a while, because I was 18 and like I had just started college, and I couldn't go to the college parties and like hang out with everyone there. So I think I was just doing what people my age do, but I was doing it in AA. What I know is that I'm still sober today, even though I did that. I'm in a relationship now, and I've been in a relationship for 2 years, but that relationship didn't start until after my first year was over, and I was in my second year. But what I learned during my first year, through like dating somebody with 2 years and dating somebody who had like less than 90 days and kind of just dating anybody who wanted to date me, was I learned how to be in relationships sober, and that's been the hardest thing for me in AA, is like learning how to be in like a good person in a relationship, like not just with my boyfriend, but with my friends and with my family. Like relationships are hands down the hardest thing for me. And so by doing it over and over and over again, I learned from my mistakes a lot of times. And I got to practice the principles a lot. That's helped me so much now. I think that's why I'm in a successful relationship now, is because I was in so many crazy first year of sobriety ones, that I learned what not to do. And I learned like what's going to make me, not want to go to a meeting, or what's going to keep me out of a meeting. And I learned how to go to meetings, even though I was really uncomfortable, with like who was there. I learned how to go to meetings anyway. And I learned how to make friends with other girls, even if they had like slept with the same guy as me, or if they liked the same guy that I did. I learned a lot of really hard lessons, I think, by dating in the first year. So, I know I'm not at 15 minutes at all, but like if I were talking to my sponsee and she was asking me if it's okay to date in the first year, I would tell her, you can do whatever you want in sobriety as long as you're willing to pay the consequences. And sometimes you don't know what the consequences are. And what I've learned is that consequences, like regardless of how bad they are, I always learn something. Because I'm an alcoholic. I don't learn anything the easy way. I don't learn anything by watching somebody else make that mistake. I learn it by making the mistake on my own several times. So I think that you can stay sober through anything. My experience has been that I can stay sober through things that I never, ever would have dreamed of staying sober through before I came to AA, with the help of the people in these rooms and my higher power. I can stay sober through some really hard stuff, and I've seen the people around me go through some really hard stuff and stay sober. And I think as long as I continue to be willing to do the work, I can make mistakes. And I just can't let those mistakes keep me out of the rooms or keep me from calling my sponsor because I'm too ashamed of what I've done. And for me, that's like a fine line, because I don't ever know what the consequences of my actions are going to be most of the time. So I don't know. I don't have like, I don't feel like there's like a really distinct message that I can give about this subject. What I do know is that if anybody tells you that you can't date in the first year, they're wrong. Cause that's not a rule. And, I also know that if you are going to meetings and sitting in the back and texting the whole time and talking to the cute guys afterwards, you're probably not going to get anything for your sobriety at that meeting. So I don't know. I really hope somebody got something out of that. And I don't know if you have questions about any of that, you can ask me after the meeting. How long have I been talking? Okay, so that's all I have. Thanks for listening to me.
Now I would like to welcome our next speaker, Tyler L. from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, my name is Tyler. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tyler.
So I guess I'll qualify. I started drinking at 13, but even before that, I always felt different. I didn't feel normal in my skin from the earliest age that I can remember. When I was in elementary school, I would skip school in elementary school and just walk straight up my street as far as I could go and then turn around and walk back just for no reason, just because I didn't know how to feel comfortable. And I'll give you some family history, too. My grandma killed herself when I was 4. Both of my uncles are diagnosed bipolar, and I take schizophrenic medication. So I have a therapist. I have a general practitioner that I see. I have a psychiatrist I see. So I have to do medication as well as AA. But before I started on medication, I had my first drink at 13, and that was my medication. That was it for me. It made me feel normal. And it's what worked for about a year. And then it stopped working, and I still kept drinking. And I drank all through high school. It was just something that I did, how I got through my days. I woke up, I drank for breakfast, and then I ate. And that's how I functioned. And I wasn't very functioning. But I had my first suicide attempt at 12. And I initially after that, I started drinking. And then the suicide attempts went away with my drinking. But then they came back. I've been hospitalized numerous, numerous times for psychosis and mental disorders. I don't know how many times I lost track of how many times I tried killing myself because I just was so miserable in my own skin. And so I'm going to talk about what the solution for me is I don't like talking about fucking war story and all that shit, because to me, my solution is working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and taking medication and praying and talking to my sponsor. And in doing that, the relief that I used to get from drinking that stopped working, it comes back. The feeling of okay, it's there as long as my connection with God is there. And I have to take medication, and I probably have to take medication for the rest of my life. That's something that I've just come to accept. For a while in my early sobriety, I thought maybe I could go off, and I got 10 months into the program, and I stopped taking my medication, and I relapsed. And so for me, it goes hand in hand. I have to take my medication, and I have to go to AA. And if any of those two things are out of whack, I'm probably going to get fucked up. And so my life was chaotic, it's chaos, and I didn't know how to manage shit. I'm 29 years old. I just got my first apartment. And it just started like being an adult at 29 years old, because prior to that, I just relied on other people. I used women and whatever. I did whatever I had to get by, and I self-medicated. And now I don't have to do that. And it's as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a really close contact with my sponsor, who helps a lot with medication issues, because I wonder, like, what if I just decide someday maybe I could take 6 instead of, 3, like I'm prescribed. And I don't do that because, it's an outside issue, and I have to follow what the doctors tell me to do. So they tell me to take a certain number of pills a day. I do that. And I work very closely. I see a therapist every week. I see my psychiatrist once a month. I have to. And sometimes I don't want to. A lot of times I'm like, fuck, I'm cured. And I'm like, I'm normal, and I don't need to take pills anymore, and I don't need to go to AA. But when I start thinking like that, and when I start behaving in that frame of mind. I have to start being honest with myself and with my sponsor and with my therapist, with my psychiatrist, because at that point, that's when it gets really dangerous for me. That's when I get really close to wanting to get fucked up. And that's when I probably will get fucked up if I'm not honest. So, and that's what this program has given me, is an ability to be open and honest and talk about this stuff and not have a problem with it. I wasn't the type of person that, like, told people, you know, hey, I'm crazy, I'm fucked up mentally. But, because I didn't want to, when I first met you, I hid that shit. I don't want you to know that I fucking was psycho and without medication, you know, I didn't want anyone to know about that shit because it was something I was ashamed of. And, you know, eventually it always came out, of course, because, you know, I would get fucking drunk, I would black out, and I would try fucking my friends' girlfriends and, you know, fighting my friends. And I was the asshole that would show up at the party and start a fight, and everyone would be like, oh, shit, here's that fucking asshole again. And that was me. I was the guy that came and ruined everyone's fun. And that's how I existed. And, you know, it got to a point in my drinking that people didn't want to hang out with me anymore. You know, and it got to a point where I didn't want to hang out with me, and I needed to find something else. And I actually did find something else through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps of AA have transformed my life. I'm a 3.5 grade point average student right now. I go to college. Like I said, I have my own apartment. I know that doesn't seem like a big deal, but for someone that relied on, you know, older women to take care of him and, you know, other people my whole life, it's a huge step in the right direction. I know I probably shouldn't say that. Not that I'm proud of that at all. In fact, I was really ashamed of the fact that I would use women in my addiction. And it's how I got through, you know, how I dealt with what I believed was an insurmountable problem, my mental illness and my alcoholism. But because of this program, I can go anywhere now. I am able to, you know, travel to Vegas. And last time I was here, I was blacked out on Fremont Street doing really bad things. I was told later. Because I was an alcoholic that people had to tell me what I did the next day. And I relied on other people as my memory. And now I don't have to do that. It's a fine line for me, too, because I question a lot of the times whether should I take medication. And, you know, that right there is insanity in itself. If I start telling myself I don't need to take medication, I don't need to, you know, do fucking the work that got me here in the first place to where I'm at, where I can function as a human being, then I need to really take a look at that behavior and those thoughts that get me there. I'm really, really grateful to be sober today. I don't take any mood or mind-altering drugs. My psychiatrist knows I'm a recovering alcoholic and a recovering meth addict, so I'm very well regulated as far as, like, you know, they're not the kind of drugs that you could take and get fucked up. Although I'm such an alcoholic, I question, what if I fucking do that? What if I take, you know, four or five instead of, you know, prescribed three a day? And that's the kind of stuff that I have to be honest with and talk about, you know, with my sponsor and my therapist and, you know, with you guys and meetings and stuff. Because if I don't, if I don't open up about that shit, it'll get me drunk. And I couldn't explain to you guys what my life looked like a year ago. I was a blackout alcoholic. I hung out with bums because my friends that I had since elementary school stopped wanting to hang out with me, because I burnt every bridge I had. I have a twin brother. He does not talk to me anymore because in my addiction, I smashed him in the face with a beer bottle and gave him a 4-inch scar. He will not accept amends from me. He does not talk to me. And that's something that I have to deal with. You know, I talked to my sponsor about it. You know, people aren't ready to hear amends. You can't force it on anybody. Right now I'm on step 9, and it fucking sucks. Because I really just, I want to get done. I'm not the type of person that wants to fuck around with, I don't want to fuck around with, you know, bullshitting around my steps, because it's what helps me. My conscious contact with God comes from me working a proper program. And what that looks like is talking to my sponsor every week, getting together with him, reading the book. For me, it's really simple. I thought it was going to be really difficult because, you know, I'm a little bit crazy. And it really hasn't been. What I've done is gone through the book with my sponsor, and when it comes to an action, I've just fucking done it. And it's just that simple. When it says to do something, I've done it. And it's kept me sober. I did relapse. I had 10 months in the program, and I relapsed because I stopped taking my medication. And so that's something that I have to, you know, I have to keep really close watch on. My sobriety date is June 8th, 2011. When I drink and use drugs, I don't have an off switch. So it's just like as much as I can possibly drink and do, I will do. And I don't have to live like that anymore. And it's all thanks to this fucking program. I am so thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't have the best relationships with everyone that I would like, but the people that I do have in my life, I'm so thankful that they're in my life. All my friends are in the program. And, you know, this is an amazing thing. And I really believe that you get what you put into it. And so for me, it's pretty much life or death for me. Because when I drink and use, I don't, like I said, I don't have an off switch. And I wind up in the fucking psych ward because of a suicide attempt or because I fucking overdosed on whatever. Or, you know, I mean, I don't, whatever drugs you have, I will say yes to. I'm not the kind of person that's like, oh, meth? No. I do whatever. And I've come a long ways from that, where I just did whatever the fuck I had to. I'm really, really proud to say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to sum it all up, I would say if you have any questions about mental issues or like anything outside issues other than like working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, anything that has to do with mental health, come talk to me after the meeting. I will sit down. We can talk about anything you want to. And I'm really open. I will tell you anything you ask me. And we can fucking talk. I can give you my fucking psychiatrist number if you need help. You know, she's a fucking great person. And I'm serious. She's helped save my life. That's all I got.
Thank you, Tyler. Finally, please help me welcome our last speaker, Andrew H. from Portland, Oregon.
I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Andrew.
I'm grateful to be here. And I'm honored to be able to stand up here and speak on a panel. This is my third Wacky Paw, and you know, I've come to a few of these, and basically I am very honored to be up here, like I just said. So my topic is the fifth tradition, and I'll just tell you guys a little bit of what it was like. So I drank, and I know that from the instant that I drank, that feeling of complete wholeness, and really, when you drink and it just, you flush over, your face gets red, and I just knew that, like, this is what I wanted to do, and I did it. And so at times I was bulletproof, at times I could dance, at times I liked to sit in my basement by myself and drink. At times I would get kicked out of bars. I would crash my bike. But I felt free, and that's why I drank. And, you know, there were a lot of, when I talk about feeling free, I used to think that everybody drank and felt the way that I felt when they drank. And I've learned that's not necessarily true. I also have come to find out that when I start to drink, and I knew this from early on, I just didn't have any formal definitions, I suffer from the phenomenon of craving. And so when I do start to drink, I too do not have an off switch. And it was hard for me to come to the program at the age of 21 and think to myself that I'm never going to drink again. You know, the old timers, oh, just for today. And I would think to myself, fuck you. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous sober. And that feeling of not being able to fall back upon alcohol in the way that it felt when I drank it was extremely scary. So I didn't know necessarily what to do. I came to my original home group was a men's meeting, and I was the youngest guy by 20 years. That was awkward. And, you know, those old guys, those old bastards, they were good. And, you know, they carried the message. And here's the thing, is I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I told you how I didn't think I could stay sober forever. Well, I couldn't really concede to my innermost self until I heard another alcoholic talk about the way he felt when he drank, the way he felt when he was sober. And when I heard that, I just knew. I just knew I was an alcoholic. Like, I couldn't lie to myself anymore. I was in rehab, and actually this kid played for the University of Oregon. He was a football player, and I identified with that because I played football. And, you know, that kid didn't stay sober, but I think he was one of those Eskimos. And when he started talking about drinking the 40s out in Sacramento and, like, all that shit, I was like, yeah. And he said he was an alcoholic. His name was Terrence. Terrence, I'm an alcoholic. And like I said, I could finally just relate to somebody. And I knew I was an alcoholic. So I kind of challenged the steps. I was like, if these steps are going to work and it's going to make me feel better, I'm going to do it. Because I felt like hot shit. And so I got out of rehab. It was 28 days. I went to that old-timers meeting. And, you know, there was about 60 of those guys. And I heard those guys talk. And I had enough willingness, enough open-mindedness, and enough honesty inside myself to say, yeah, I drink like they drink. I feel like they feel. My original grand sponsor, he had 33 years. He was born in, he got sober in 77, and I identified with that old goat. he was a great guy, a great guy. And so, basically, today, what I've come to realize is it says each group, emphasis on the group, has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It's not Andrew's primary purpose, it's my group's. And today I have a different home group, and they're one of those, you know, I don't even know why this would be a controversial topic. It's the fifth tradition. Why are we? There's no controversy. I think, I guess, like, you know, there's when people talk about drugs. Oh, that scares people in meetings. They're like, "Don't talk about drugs. Is this guy about to talk about drugs?" And I think to myself, you know, we have this one guy in our group, and when there's new people, and when they talk, they'll say, like, "So I dabbled in some outside issues," and then they'll call on him, and he'll say, "So for anybody that's new and doesn't know what they're talking about, outside issues, that means they're fucking drugs." I knew that when I share in a pretty general way. I don't necessarily talk about how much alcohol I consumed. I don't talk about the types of drugs that I do. I talk about how they made me feel and how they changed my perception on life. And those are really the feelings that people are going to identify with. If I'm a brand new guy and I walk into a meeting and somebody's talking about their dead cat, I'm going to be like, this is group therapy. I'm not coming back here again. And that's why it's the group's purpose to carry the, you know, carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And today, if I don't identify, I'm not going to come back to meetings. And that's why if you don't like what's going on in your group, try to bring the message in your group. And maybe people will follow suit. And if not, you know, there's other groups that will take that initiative on and are well versed in the traditions. Another thing is, when I think when they wrote the book, they weren't necessarily talking about drugs. I mean, Bill Wilson talks about drugs in his first story. I think they were talking about more, we don't say, yeah, I'm Andrew and I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. Like, we don't talk about those type, that's an outside issue, and that's not carrying the message to anybody. And so there's all sorts of things. In my group right now, I think we're the church that we pay rent to, we are building a bookcase, or they want us to like to build a bookcase for them and pay for it. And I don't really know if that's, I think that's an outside issue. It may be. Just charge us more rent. Anyways, I know that if I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't hear what I needed to hear, I wouldn't have a place anymore. And that's scary. That's scary because I came here feeling desperate, lonely, didn't know how to stay sober. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous took the time out of their day, out of their life, sat down with me. I went to meetings, and they were sitting there carrying the message. And today I feel like it's my responsibility to give it back. And I'm grateful for that. So thanks, both of you. Both of you, and thank you guys. Bye.
Thank you, Dre. The Wacky Paw 15 host committee would like to thank all of the conference participants and attendees for making this this weekend possible and magical. So this panel goes until 5:15, and it's 4:30 now. So I could talk for 45 minutes. No. But we would actually like to open it up for a Q&A. Are there any Qs in the audience which we can match to one of these A's? Yes. To reiterate Quinn's question, there is a AA commercial that he saw airing in California, and he wonders how this deals with the topic of attraction rather than promotion. Is this simply promotion? Does anyone on our panel have anything that they would like to share about that? I'll speak on this one very quickly, but my name's Chad Alcoholic, obviously.
Hi, Chad.
And in my personal life, I will tell people that I am sober. I will tell people that I do not drink, do not do drugs, I don't party and play, I don't do this, I don't do that. I'm not interested in doing these things. And that's because I need to keep myself safe. And also because I feel that other people deserve to know that information. I don't tell people that I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do not identify other members of Alcoholics Anonymous in public. However, everybody on this panel, everybody who's a friend of mine on Facebook, knows my first and last name, and knows that I'm an alcoholic, and all of my good friends know that I'm an alcoholic. They know that I attend Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's where I draw the line of anonymity. I, as a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if I were to relapse tomorrow and I'm the only person that this person knows in Alcoholics Anonymous, then what does that say about this program? You know, it makes the program, it reflects poorly on the program. And all I can speak about is my own personal experience. So do you guys have anything that you would like to add to that?
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 to $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.